Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of What's New in Cloud FinOps with myself, Stephen Old, and my good friend,
Franck Contrepoix.
And today we're doing another very interesting interview episode around the state of FinOps, which came out earlier this year, and lots of new news. We've got another mystery guest, and now it's time for our mystery guest to reveal themselves.
Hi. I'm Steve Trask. I'm VP of Marketing at the FinOps Foundation.
Great to have you, Steve. And as listeners know, we basically give the people no real notification of how they're going to be introduced and just make it as awkward as possible. Steve did very well.
He has his VP voice. I was
going to go further. My role's kind of, everyone thinks VP marketing is something. They're trying to sell me something. They're trying to do positioning. And it's a very different role. It's more around engaging. It's kind of like the community, the FinOps community is the customer. How do we get that engaged? How do we kind of distribute information of the best practices? You know, run events is part of my role. FinOps X Europe coming up. And part of it is research as well. So State of FinOps, I've been doing for, I think this is the fourth year. Yeah, we've been doing it since the start. So it's been a journey.
Any of the
as well.
Roles you've done, Steve, have you had any of this kind of level of research stuff? Or is this pretty unique to being here?
I've always been kind of analytical, I would say. I'm always deep into kind of digital analytics, kind of web stuff, more kind of code-based background, where I do like to kind of dig into the data. We also paired with the Linux Foundation research team. You know, shout out to Hillary and Stephen, who joined us. I think it was the second year we did that with them. Well, when the foundation joined the Linux Foundation, we actually kind of lent on that team. So they brought in a lot of best practices and kind of what they do. They run lots of research all the time. So we've taken that and run with that as well. So it's been really advantageous having that wealth of knowledge in the wider Linux Foundation to kind of call on.
So was the first year before you joined the Linux Foundation? Or just at that same time?
It was 2000. Yes, it would be, yes.
So how did that start? Like, whose idea was it?
Well, it was the point where, state of reports were kind of coming out. Andrew on the team actually did the state of DevOps. Interesting at, I can't remember the company, was working at in Portland. But we were looking to kind of recognize actually FinOps as a thing. You know, the first year, we know people are doing this thing. And it's kind of like, how do we actually understand this more, this practice more? So that's really kind of where it originated. It's kind of like, okay, we need to understand how people are doing it, what they're doing it, what are they calling it, you know, all those basic kind of things around, you know, defining it as a practice. I suppose we've moved on from that to kind of, you know, we did benchmarking last year. Now we're moving more into industry trends this year. We've really kind of seen that adoption curve throughout the research as well. Mm-hmm. You know, we've gone from like looking at team sizes, where people are located, organization sizes or industries. We're really seeing the broadening of industries as well. You know, this year we're seeing some like healthcare and retail being significant industries in there, but there's always the mainstay of the financial services or the technology companies, which have always been there. But as the adoption of FinOps kind of grows out in regions and industries, we're definitely getting much more respondents. And obviously there's no paid respondents. Yeah. So that's very different from a lot of research that, you know, people go out there and they kind of go, we've got 700 people who know what FinOps is and they've given us an answer rather than, you know, from the community, these are the responses from people non-paid who are doing the roles. And we even segment it in the report as well. You know, are you managing your own cloud spend? Are you a platform provider, et cetera? So I think something to touch on, I would say, is where it becomes more difficult. And it becomes easier because the more responses you get. But actually, team, for example, a team makeup was, you know, we initially said team sizes are this size and this is how they're growing and this is what we predict they're growing. But team sizes, as you probably know, are quite complicated, as in they might be augmented with a consultant, a contractor, kind of services. You might have a really just one point person for FinOps who's actually, you know, anyone managing a spend below $1 million a year is probably doing it as part of another role, typically in engineering. So they're kind of building that role up themselves, and then they kind of bring in, if they've got like a GSI or a consultancy they're working with, sometimes they kind of, you know, it's easier to latch onto another service and expand that way. So team size is pretty tricky to kind of pin down as a best practice, because it is different for each company.
Well, FinOps being so wide, it must be very hard too, because you have people in engineering team will be part or having a persona related to FinOps, though they do some FinOps, but the reality is, that's not my job. Are you considering that central team? So one of the principles is to have that central team?
It's dedicated full-time. People dedicated full-time being on that team.
Okay.
And I think it's kind of like, if you've got two, you know, I think that's a perception that you can look at that question multiple ways. I think originally when we looked at it, we just thought team. Then we've kind of actually asked, you know, contractors, consultants, and additional folks to that team. But it, as I said, as you say, it's kind of like everyone's role is to do FinOps in an organization. It's kind of a cultural change, you know, but the team itself should be essential to kind of pushing that culture and driving that culture. It's different for each situation and cloud spend and complexities and services that you use and tooling.
So it's really hard to get. So I think that's the message. It is, yes, you've started, you had really good ideas. Something are going to be easy to collect. We're just going to get the team size, team being the example you're using. And then, it's complicated.
It's much more complicated than you think. But there's general guidance. I think there's general guidance things there. I mean, even like with the cloud providers and kind of like the key priorities have shifted so much. You know, the key priorities are segmented by different cloud provider. They're actually very similar. You know, from when we started, they were different. There was definitely key kind of points of differentiation there, but actually now it's similar across all cloud providers. There's one or two points, but you know, they're very similar. But you know, seeing the economic factors weigh in, and in the recent report, you know, pushing from that cultural adoption from getting engineers to take action, being number one for 3 years, and now suddenly it's reducing waste, and engineering action is actually dropping, because we're seeing definitely some wider adoption. We're maturing. Training is coming in, education, self-serving reporting. They're finding more value, the engineers, and I think they're getting on board. I think it's also executive buy-in, I think, is a big thing. We've definitely seen a lot more executive engagement. Last year at FinOps X, we had executives on the keynote, for example. So it's definitely on the priority for executives. So the market, the economic market and the economic climate is really impacting the narrative there. And you'll see it from the main cloud providers' narratives. It's around optimization, being efficient. Look at, you know, AWS reInvent's keynote, very much about the frugal architect and how it's important to be cost conscious.
I'm smiling there. Well, listeners, you cannot see that, but this, because there was this, I could see on the other side, you listen to the quarterly reports of the cloud vendors. They say, customer optimizing, that's why my revenues are down. Sorry. And it's, wow. So
I think the cloud's just want their customers to be, you know, to be efficiently using it. It's value. It's around that business value. It's driving that business value. And that's why the cloud providers are part of the foundation. They want to help solve this and make it easier for people. The complexity, I think, is, you know, with the focus project coming in as well, is going to really, really help kind of remove some complexity of that normalization.
Yes.
And I think it's going to enable the practitioners to solve more challenges. You know, another factor probably coming in we've seen is, like, I think it's been in since the original report, is around automation. We've seen automation brought up several times. People weren't technically doing automation, I think, majority at the start. Then we saw kind of it kind of increasing, but no one really kind of, the adoption of automation has been very, very slow across the 4 years. This year we looked at kind of like, well, what automation are you kind of doing? Is there human action still in that automation? Is it fully automated, hands off? Are you collecting the data and the kind of like the reporting, and then you're actioning human with a human action? or are you kind of completely kind of implementing that action as well? Or is that automation implementing that action? So it's, there's different levels, and I think it's, there's definitely some interesting aspects of actually there's some barriers to automation. I know everyone wants to get to that fully automated state, but really probably what they want to get to is the less human interaction, but actually still humans in the loop. That's probably where we want to get
to. Yeah, I think the change this year is a very interesting one. And I think, I can't remember if I wrote about this at the time or if I just thought about it. The empowering engineers take action, at flipping and changing to the reducing of waste, and then commitment to the second one. But it's the same problem reframed, because the engineers are the people that still need to reduce this waste. And I think it comes back to something you said, Steve, that actually now the FinOps practitioners filling in these the responses feel like the engineers are more on board, or they're having better conversations. But the problem is still lying in the priority, and the fact that engineers still have other priorities. So while they're being more open to it, they've still got the pressures that they've had to release code, to create infrastructure, whatever it might be. And that's why there's that bit of a flip to exec buy-in being one of the key areas of focus this year, because people are kind of saying, this needs to come from you. The engineers want to do it, but aren't finding the time. The FinOps guys are finding the opportunities and working with engineers. Can you let us reshift for these priorities? Is it going to become, and I've said this before on the podcast, but companies need to do three things. They need to increase revenues, they need to keep their current customers, and they need to reduce costs. They can never do all three at once. You can only ever kind of focus on one, do a bit on another, and ignore the third generally. and people kind of saying, you know, is it time with the current economy to flip to some of that cost cutting? And, you know, we've seen a lot of things with layoffs and stuff, but it'd be great to see some drive into just some focused time for engineers to go and do these things. Because engineers don't want to be wasteful by design, right?
No. Well, and I want to say, I'm going to be tricky there. The idea is that are just the engineers, they kind of, they were for 3 years, we were trying to make them doing stuff. By the way, I'm an ex-engineer and I love still engineer, but it is. And so now we've succeeded in being ignored by these guys. They've moved their priority away from us because they can't get us to move.
I generally so find very rarely do I speak to an engineer and they say, I don't want to do it. They always say, where do I prioritize it, right? And that's the real challenge.
Well, it's also, there is an impact. If you spend 10 quid more, or even double your cloud bill, it's past leave, and then the system went down. So you draw, your system went down, you're fired. Yeah. Let's be very clear. The other one, you are slapped. Yeah. On the hands, obviously.
That's absolutely fair. Steve, going back to something else you said about focus and how important that's going to come going forward. In future iterations, are you going to use the state of FinOps to look at the uptake of focus and how that grows and drives?
I mean, we haven't started next year's, but we typically start that in August. But I imagine so. There's definitely going to be a focus question in there, because we're starting to see early adopters of focus. You know, expecting there's going to be some kind of adoption from technology providers and platforms. So it's going to become more available to people to use rather than using converters. So I think it's going to be interesting to see that adoption story continue. But yeah, I imagine so. It's like this year we did a couple of questions around, you know, like AI costs, AI ML costs. We didn't actually kind of put a multi-select or anything. It's like it's a free form. You tell us exactly kind of how you're seeing this impact. That's the cost of using those services. And we did get a lot of responses kind of like thinking, you know, there is going to be an impact much more at the higher end. The big spenders are kind of investing into AI ML, but there's, again, you're talking about this is where the innovation is coming. This is where the experimentation is. And you have to kind of release those costs slightly to kind of allow that freedom to kind of innovate and, you know, get that competitive advantage, or, you know, keep those customers happy, as you're saying. It's interesting to see how that comes in, but again, it's tying it to that business value. Mm-hmm. How do you tie those AI costs to that? I think that's where the struggle is at the moment, but that, we're in experimentation with any new technology. with, you know, that, you know, with like Kubernetes or something like that, where it's like suddenly you see this plethora of people using it, but actually how much value is it driving for the business is going to come later on. But, you know, next year, I imagine some more questions on that as well as focus. You know, we're seeing definitely some business pressures on having more granular accuracy within forecasting and budgeting. So I think that, there's those priorities. It's like, how much pressure are there, is going to be put on that, you know, with, you know, you're forecasting this, but you spent this. Which is, it's kind of within
AI
specific areas.
AI can really move those needles very quickly, right? It can become very expensive very quickly, so that the forecast can quickly be wildly off. If people thought, like, IaaS could be bad for that, they're going to be staggered.
I think that's the sentiment. The sentiment we got was kind of like, you know, not. I think one of the quotes where someone responded was like, it's rapidly increasing and no one is screening yet. It's kind of like it's coming. They know it's very much coming, and the pace is, you know, it's very intensive. It's even very intensive from an, you know, even if you look at from an energy perspective.
But investors also, investors are all in. Yes, you're going to show me AI. That's fine. You have a couple of quarters to test. I expect this to become profitable in 6 months' time.
Another way people were looking at the data was actually the cost reductions they were doing, they were actually pushing into their AI budgets. Mm-hmm. So it's not just cost reducing to be more profitable. It's actually, we just want to use that resource more effectively, that value more effectively and put into experimentation.
That's a good idea.
I have a question which brings us back also to state of FinOps, I think, which is, what is the most important thing that you've noticed by being so much in the depth of that, but that almost everyone misses? So is there a piece of information that almost everyone misses and you say, oh crap, why?
Come on,
we're not here to make simple questions.
I think it's sometimes, I suppose one of the points that's probably undervalued is how do you measure the value of the FinOps team? How do you kind of validate the worth and the kind of, I want to get an extra team member. We talk about team sizes. I want to get three more engineers on the FinOps team. You know, how do you measure that? And every, you know, there's a lot of people measuring it on costs. It's on a dollar amount. It's like, how much have you saved? Variance in forecasts, anomalies detection, is another area people are saying, but there's kind of additional areas that people can kind of add in which aren't as tangible. I think that's the difficult thing, is as a cultural thing, you have these everything's so data driven these days.
Yep.
Everything's kind of in business is like trying to be put into an order, and everything's trying to be put in a logical process, where I think there's things that the FinOps teams are doing that businesses aren't necessarily realizing the value they're getting. Yeah. It's kind of like, it's various things for release frequency or kind of like all these different things that can kind of impact things. But people bring in unit economics to try and pin that digit down. I think there's definite things of the value of the FinOps team that people don't necessarily measure or don't kind of realize. I think that's the one that's probably undervalued within the report or undervalued within that. Because I think if you invest in your FinOps team, the return you're going to get, the ratio return, is always going to be in your favor. If you're following those best practices, I think it's you know, especially at scale, the return on investment is really there, huge, to kind of drive that business value.
Now I'm going to go back and ask a question, which I hope is not as nasty, but I don't expect you to know exact figures.
I'm sure it will be.
So on our fourth year, I say you're on your fourth year, I kind of, you know, consider myself part of the community. So I consider, exactly.
We're in this together.
what's been kind of the growth in number of respondents? Like how, I mean, it's grown massively, right? What's year one versus year four?
As in respondents or community
itself?
Both,
if you like, and we can look at them together. But certainly respondents would be an interesting one.
I mean, respondents, I think we originally, I'm trying to remember what the original one was. I think we were looking at like 500 responses or something, or maybe even 800. I think that's kind of, kind of where we 500. And I know one year we tried to get 1,000 and we got like a 1,004, and it was kind of, you obviously have to like deduplicate, you cleanse any junk data, you have to go through that whole process. And you kind of have to clean it all up. But pure like initial respondents, we just got over that. This year, I think we've grown to, I think we're over 1,300, maybe 1,400. Again, I would love more. I would love more from, you know, different regions. I think EMEA and North America is where we can kind of pull kind of actual valuable data that we can kind of stand behind. You know, South America, I know we've got some data on that, especially around the salaries and the kind of the jobs market there. So I'd love more data from the different regions to see how those things are impacting. But having said that, the data, there's, you know, the data across, probably across the years, it's kind of coming to the same. It's kind of like there's a few subtle differences where previously there used to be vast differences, but it's a convergence. The global story is not that different in each region, essentially. There are subtle kind of differences, you know, with team structure, for example, in EMEA might be slightly different, but typically goes under technology. You know, we've seen it under COO, we've seen it under different places in EMEA compared to North America, but generally the priorities are pretty much the same. Sustainability being one slight little difference. Obviously they're more kind of, a bigger swing is expected in kind of like EMEA. And I think there's definitely a bit of a kind of a leading start on that as well. But overall, as the weird thing about sustainability as well is when you look at overall the priorities, like the key priorities, the increased priorities, sustainability isn't there in the top for practitioners. It's just not there yet. It's just not on that priority list. I think it will be. It will be increasing. We're predicting that shift that teams need to collaborate more with their sustainability teams. But, you know, comparing with the economic factors and all the different factors that, you know, as you're talking about priorities for engineers, but priorities for FinOps practitioners, it's not in the top section,
but yeah,
which is quite surprising. I think it's definitely coming. I think that's again next year. We'll love to see how much of a swing in the next 12 months we're gonna, when we start seeing regulation.
I do think that the cloud vendors have a big part in play with that. Until you have the data to play with it, if you continue to get 3 months data of a continent, how many decisions can I make where every 3 months I can make? It's too complicated.
Some updates this month, which are better.
Yes, I haven't seen that yet.
I think it's not a single threaded thing. That, you know, within the Linux Foundation, we have LF Energy as well, and the Green Software Foundation. So there is definitely a larger story and a larger connectivity here with sustainability. It's like, we need to sort out the energy aspect. And even if you're, you know, it's terribly complex. So even if your data center is using fully renewable source of energy, are you taking that away from homes that are going to be using fossil fuels? So then therefore, actually it's slightly null and void. It's
That
reallocation.
You didn't think about
so it's definitely a complex thing, but I think it's coming into the narrative. You know, executives, for example, it's coming into the executive narratives a bit more. So we're definitely going to be digging into kind of how that changes. But there's no, as you say, there's no definitive best practices around it. So the FinOps practitioners can't actually action anything really fundamental where actually the reducing the waste, driving that culture change, they can still kind of do those factors.
Have you ever had any responses and I don't want to mean individual responses, because I bet you've had some quite amusing individual responses. But is there anything that came out of the community from the kind of the larger state of FinOps that you just didn't expect? When you put a question out there, when something came back that was just not what you thought?
I'm trying to think. There's been questions we've asked where we've got a hypothesis on answers where it just comes back with a bit, oh, okay, everything's kind of equal and there's no real point there. And I feel like that's a wasted question, because over the last 4 years, I think we started with 65 questions, and people's time is valuable these days. And you know, this year's was 38, and we're trying to look and reduce and kind of like, how do we get it down to 35? Because we want people to kind of do it within a reasonable amount of time. And, you know, 60 questions is a long survey, and we couldn't do that anymore. I think, you know, people's time is valuable. I think one of the aspects is probably around I know this is going to slightly, you know, this is slightly complex, but it's around the budget structures. We asked it this year, and it's like, how do you structure your budgets in your organization? Is it kind of like a small number of large individual budgets, no team level breakdowns? Or, you know, is it a large, or is it a small number of large individual with breakdowns and visibilities for team allocations? Or is it a large number of individual budgets by teams? I think that's, it's quite a complicated kind of data aspect. And also it's very hard to change. It's kind of actually, if you're one and trying to move to another, I imagine it's a struggle to kind of make that shift as soon as you scale.
I've been working in a big insurance company, and their P&Ls were at a CTO level, and they had a CTO per business unit. And so the gap between the accountability and the responsibility for spend was just ginormous. And there was no clear way to do it. No P&Ls existed below that. And so they kind of put in a company-wide tool and gave teams access. But because they were so far away from any budget responsibility, they didn't care. And that's
where Showback comes handy, at least, is you can start being able to split that value, because P&L is still an official financial document. So you really need to change stuff.
They tagged by the team, but the teams, because they didn't have any actual accountability for the spend, they didn't care. So we put in carbon benchmarking instead, and people cared about that because it wasn't their money, but it was their planet. That's what we ended up having to do there. It was because they had that big buckets, and even though they had tried to break it down lower down, because there was just no actual filter down of or anything. And even, I mean, they spent millions and millions on the cloud, but it was still a tiny part of their overall budgets. And so, you know, they were never going to get in big, like you said, you know, you might get slapped for it, but they were never going to get a big slap for it compared to other things. So it's really hard to bring any caring.
I think that's the thing is that, are they going to eventually move to the point where they need that granularity? Business organizations are generally wanting, you know, as soon as that cloud spend gets a significant portion of their costs, that's where it starts moving up people's agenda. But
That's why you're correct. But that's also, when is the cloud? If you're doing, there are some industries, quite a big chunk of them, which might never get to that point. It's just IT is a necessary evil already. Now we're making it more complicated. Oh, crap. So no, there are places there, but I think that's the bit, is we live in a world of cloud and of FinOps, the three of us in particular. And sometimes I'm surprised to hear people say, yeah, we thought about it, we completely discarded it. And they're, oh, how is that even possible? And it's we see it everywhere when it's not. But I have another question for you. Uh-oh. Be ready. What is the, can you remember the funniest answer you've got? Something that made you or the other one laugh. You know, you read that and you say, oh.
Oh, I'm going to really have to, give me a second on that one to think about that.
There's a real chance there have been some inappropriate ones, Frank, which
I know.
We haven't had any inappropriate answers.
Oh, come on. FinOps people, you're too good.
We definitely had some very honest, I won't specifically say any, I think some honest aspects of kind of like insights into their organizations, where people are very kind of direct and honest about some of their struggles. I think some of their struggles is, you know, as you say, priorities, you know, driving that culture is very hard. It's a hard thing to do. And they've definitely kind of come back with the freeform answers of people kind of being, you know, banging their heads against walls of kind of like trying to do this and trying to deliver this. And it's a tough gig to do. FinOps practitioners is hard. And I think it's that cultural element. And I think if it was simply, it wouldn't be a thing.
I was at a meetup.
How can we help those, you know, as the community, how can we help those people not feel frustrated? And sometimes, like, you know, with teams, I spoke to someone at last year's FinOps X, and I was kind of like, what decided you to put your team in that side of the organization? And it was just like, it was all political, and this person had more power and they wanted to put it there, and they took it away and moved it.
Done.
And that was it. It was nothing, no logic, rhyme or reason. It was literally just the political power of individuals within the organization. And I think that cultural element of kind of getting those champions within the organization and getting those executives to kind of care about those things, they can then suddenly realize they can unlock certain things within the organization to move quicker, to kind of be more efficient. And I think some organizations are doing it. Some organizations find that really, you know, easy to do if they're, you know, born in the cloud as such. But these large manufacturing companies, as you mentioned, it's kind of like they've got factories, they've got thousands of workers. It's difficult compared to like a financial institution, which has 50,000 engineers or something. You know, and distributed teams, again, worldwide organizations, it's pretty hard to do. But I would say the honest thing is just probably more sympathizing with people, I think, of the frustrations is the thing. It's like, oh, that's hard. That's
we tough. Had a meetup in Manchester. In fact, it's the first one. We had a guy come and give a talk on the Lightning Talks at the beginning. And I won't say where he's from. He was a lovely, lovely guy. Obviously very good at his job and just a wonderful human being as well when I got to speak to him more. But he basically said, right, I'm in this massive company. This is what we want to do. This is where it stops when we try. And the end of his talk was, what should I do? And, you know, and I was just like, what a talk. Like, it was the most interesting talk. And I'll say that having spoken myself, it was far more interesting than mine because everyone was, you know, it was just open vulnerability of like, I have tried everything I can think of. Come and give me something different because, you know, this isn't taking. And it was, you know, it was a big, big company. And it was, a couple of years ago now, so probably not the knowledge around FinOps that there is now in terms of in the wider organization. So he probably did feel like he was banging his head against the wall. And I can imagine his state of FinOps response, if it was anywhere around the same time as that, would have just been like, it's impossible. No one listens.
Well, that's...
Yeah, it's honest and being vulnerable is like that. And I think that's what... Me personally, I love about the community, about how everyone wants to help. Everyone wants to help each other because, you know, you can be suffering in silence and kind of think, this is just impossible. How do I even do this? But hopefully that person got like 20 good responses from the audience to go, this is the steps you can take. I've tried this. How about kind of tackling that? Because as soon as you get that win, as soon as you get that kind of movement,
even if it's just in one part of the organization, just succeed somewhere. You know, repeat and try again.
I mean, that's a good point because some people kind of like, you know, how we kind of label it. It's not just about cost optimization or kind of reducing costs. It's actually kind of having more value, but driving those reducing waste or driving those optimizations actually sometimes is the kind of like the sell to the rest of the company or kind of like to prove the value to kind of, as you say, validate the team to kind of like get that kind of expansion. And I think it's just proving it beyond that. And that's where you get the real kind of magnitude of scale with the cultural change. But, you know, that those costs and those optimizations often are the kind of the business case, the proof point that people need.
But yes, because you need to justify things, but which also brings to another point is you see lots of job descriptions, for example. And I think it would be really valuable to have a job description. You remember, Steve, we did that for consultancy. We were providing also the job description for the different
roles. We did for an organization.
For the FinOps thing. And I think that would be something really valuable because lots of companies also, as you say, they are using the money or the ROI or we're going to save money immediately, which means that as soon as it starts, as a person starts as a FinOps practitioner, they need to get that money back because they need to justify their existence. So we're putting them in a complicated situation. I think if you could come up with a list of though this is a team, those are the hats of a FinOps. Like you have the personas, you have those personas for each one of them. This is a job description. And it might be different for maturity, size, whatever. So it helps the person that's going to either hire or start, say, this is my job. This is what I'm supposed to do.
I think that's definitely a great point because we do have the job site as well. We have the jobs board. It's definitely proving really useful. We have thousands of jobs go through there. So we actually store all those job descriptions as well. So we can find common traits and we can kind of analyze those. I know Stacey's kind of like aligning, looking at like how does the training kind of align to the jobs and making sure that kind of fits all together. But yeah, I think even just, I mean, every company is going to be different. This is the where kind of like I see my role is like, we always measure ourselves on impact. The foundation is like, how do we make the most impact for the community? And I think if we can offer something that could be tailored to individual companies, that we can give you the boilerplate as such. That's definitely a good idea of how we can structure the, you know, we don't want to say this is how to structure your exact team.
No,
but it's kind of like if you're looking for these different roles, these are some of the kind of descriptions.
You've done most of the work with a framework. The framework identifies your team.
And that's it. Yeah. You're meant to take kind of elements from the best practices and the things and then put that kind of adapt it to your exact requirements. I think that's again with the data and the state of FinOps. It's kind of we have to be broad and we have to be kind of, we can't be very particular because the amount of times that people go, oh, it'd be great if you could ask these three questions. And it's like these precise questions. And I'm like, well, you might not get the answer you're looking for, but you'll get like one individual view for one person. But to keep it kind of broad, it's kind of like actually we've asked these questions around forecasting features. Mm-hmm. Which ones have you implemented and which are you desired? And it's kind of like that's for the community then to kind of take.
Yep.
And go, okay, how are we going to implement this or take that conversation further, you know, within the community as well. So it's not necessarily the end point. It's almost like the starting point. And the state of FinOps really does feed into the TAC, the technical advisor committee, to kind of integrate into what working groups should be happening, what best practices we should be doing. It really does feed into multiple areas and programs of the foundation. And I really do see it as a starting point. We are considering and looking at launching a couple of mini surveys, potentially by FinOpsX in June. So we're kind of like looking at some more specific granular aspects to that as well. So that's how we could get those specific answers.
I'm conscious of time. And Steve, thanks so much for being so generous and sharing so much time with us. You've just talked about it. Should we talk briefly about the upcoming events? There's lots going on, isn't there? I know that's, you know, keeping you underwater at the moment.
Yeah, it's definitely another string to my bow at the moment. I mean, depending on when this is released.
This week.
Obviously, this week. Okay, cool. I mean, we're in London next week for the Member Summit. It's going to be a great event. I think we're close to being full on that. We've got some great kind of interactive sessions. We've got kind of Epic Games, Virgin O2 Media presenting, among others as well. And some great kind of like talks and workshops, dashboarding, government.
And that was the meetup the night before as well, isn't it? With the AWS hackathon meetups happening. Oh, no, sorry, that's the week after.
That's before the AWS summit. Yeah. So, there's an AWS Fin hack. Steph Gooch is kind of leading the charge on that one. So much more hands-on. Kind of actually get kind of like hands on keyboard with that one. And then obviously we've got the big FinOpsX in San Diego.
How many days away is that now?
I was guessing.
They're all going to go to the website.
It's 9.5 weeks. I mean, Rob knew to like the minute. He must have a counter somewhere.
It's on the website.
It's 70 days, 20 hours, 7 minutes, and 33 seconds.
Yeah, so it's creeping really close. We're going to have some exciting news about who's going to be keynoting, I think, in the next 2 or 3 weeks. So definitely kind of like, again, buy your tickets if you're planning to go. This is the time because it's definitely kind of ramping really quickly. The hotels are all filling up. Everything's kind of, space is becoming limited. So yeah, definitely kind of grab your tickets if you're interested in going. But then we have FinOpsX Europe, which might be more preferable for this audience as well, in Barcelona in November. So yeah, that's kind of a new event for us. It's a new venue, it's a new place, it's a new audience. So we're just looking at the format of that. And there's a few new things we're going to be adding to that event. There's a few new things kind of, it's definitely going to be testing a few new things. So it's going to be quite cool. But yeah, we're looking forward. There's going to be more details in the next 2 weeks. So we're really close to launching kind of registration and sponsorship as well. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. I think actually that's going to have a different flavor and just different style. So it's going to be great. Are you both going to
both? I'm definitely going to San Diego. I still don't know about the European version of it yet. Yeah. Strangely.
Weird. Wow.
Yes, I know. Yeah, okay. She's been doing a lot of work in the US as well, don't you?
So we are, yeah, more than half. And we have, we work a lot with the University of California, San Diego. So they are very close to that. So we use that to talk to them. We work with ThoughtWorks, which also does lots of things around there.
Yeah, it's amazing, actually, speaking to some folks in the US, how much the desire is to come to the Barcelona event as well. So it's,
well, you can bring family. Kind of like,
yeah, it's kind of like that with KubeCon as well. I think there's definitely a lot of Americans that come across for kind of that. But we are limited by size. It is going to be a smaller event, you know, 800 to 1,000 in Barcelona. So
that's bigger than I thought still. That's good. I wonder if you'd have to keep it down to like 500.
Well, there is a bit of an inside kind of scoop where it originally was going to be 500.
Yes.
And then we actually, when we put the news out, we got so much demand and so many questions and so much kind of comeback. We actually went back to the hotel and said, like, can we take the whole hotel? So we could increase the capacity. I think it's definitely, yeah, it originally was 500, but now we're kind of 800.
That's very exciting. You know,
maybe a bit more we're gonna see. But no, it should be fantastic. It's gonna be great. I mean, also opens up the companies that are in, you know, Dubai, for example, the Middle East. We've had inquiries for speakers from there as well. So it really does open up geographies for us as well. So there's definitely a lot of demand in, you know, we've just done a set of events in India.
Very well attended.
Asia Pacific and Singapore. So there's, again, it's that globalization of the practice. We're seeing that worldwide adoption.
You really, every time people talk about XX, I remember about the first one when we were with that block of ice. It was so hot all over us.
Yes.
And at one point they had a block of ice and everyone was having the picture hugging the ice.
It was in Austin. Yes. It was so warm. It was so warm.
But it was brilliant.
San Diego was surprisingly clement. I couldn't believe how
It does keep a kind of moderate temperature there. I thought it would kind of spike quite high being so close to the desert, but it's actually kind of like nice and it's actually a good climate, a really good climate. Great. But yeah, I think we're definitely staying there for a while because it's a good place. It's a good place to hold it. But we're looking at ways we can expand it each year just because of the demand.
Yeah. Don't go to Vegas, please.
No, we're not. There's no plans to go to Vegas because I'm sure everyone goes there enough.
Agreed.
For other
All right. Events. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Steve. And listeners, thank you for listening. Just time to say goodbye. So bye-bye.
Thank you very much. Bye.